Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, October 20, 2016. President Kiir admits South Sudan Army is made up of his ethnic group.
The new slogan which people are now singing is that this army has become a tribal army. Why is it composed of Dinka? But where will I get people from?
And a group of youth in Torit protect civilians against road attacks.
We are defending our territory. The only thing we will protect, we will defend our territories and we will protect our people from being harassed on the way and all this.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has threatened to personally lead military operations against armed groups in the former Central Equatorial State if unidentified men continue to attack civilians on the Juba Yei Road. President Kiir said he would relocate to Yei River State to help in planning military operations against armed men killing civilians in the area. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
President Kiir made the remarks yesterday while speaking to SPLM officials and supporters during an event in Juba to celebrate the official registration of the ruling party as required by the 2012 Political Parties Act. Mr. Kiir says he is running out of patience with groups fighting to topple his government.
We will not just sit in Juba. We will go out. And I said the other time when I sent my advisors to Yei, I told them you go to Ye and tell the people that those who are now disturbing them are their own sons. If they don't call them back, I will go to Ye myself. I will relocate to go and stay in Ye. And all the operations that will go out will go under my directives and my supervision.
Mr. Kiir's remark comes on the heels of more reports about fighting between government and opposition forces in parts of Yei River State. Last week, government and UN officials condemned ethnically targeted killings by unknown gunmen along the Juba-Yei Road as well as other attacks on the Juba-Torit and Juba-Nimule Roads. The SPLM-IO and other political groups have always accused President Kiir of recruiting his tribesmen into the National Army. Mr. Kiir acknowledges for the first that the South Sudan Army is dominated by his ethnic group.
The new slogan which people are now singing is that this army has become a tribal army. Why is it composed of Dinka? But where will I get people from if the people of Equatoria have refused to join the army? And Riek Machar has rebelled with his Nuer people. So where will I get other nationalities from? The people that Daniel Awadh was bringing from Baragazal during the war were all Dinkas. The people that Kwalma Nyang'o obliged were more to come to Eastern Equatoria were all Dinkas from Bor. If they can now come and fight to defend the area, but also Mafi, for people must really thing about tomorrow.
Despite the attacks by unidentified armed groups and fighting between South Sudan Army and opposition forces in parts of the country, the president says he is still committed to restoring peace in South Sudan. Yesterday, the chairman of the Joint Monitoring Evaluation Commission, Festus Mohai, condemned the fighting between government and opposition forces. Mohai warned that unless the peace agreement is implemented, violence could escalate.
We have said that the agreement is alive because we are not giving up on the peace, because there is no option anyway. And I appeal to everybody with a bent knee and cap in hand that we should continue and engage each other.
Mohai urged the transitional government of national unity to include all political groups in implementation of the peace agreement. Government spokesman Michael Makwe says it is wrong for people to think there will be no peace in the country without Riek Machar, Lamar Kol, and Pagana Mum.
There is no question of us negotiating a new agreement with anybody who has taken up arms. We are here to negotiate and bring everybody into this agreement so that we move together in its implementation.
Makwe warned that anyone who takes up arms will be apprehended, arrested, and brought to trial. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
South Sudan's former Deputy Defense Minister says President Kiir's statement could actually encourage the formation of sectarian armed groups across the country. Majak Dagot says the statement by Mr. Kiir justifies the notion that the president is controlled by some politicians from his ethnic group. Majak, who is a professional soldier, says the South Sudanese leaders should not let their own ethnic groups destabilize the country.
Whether you are talking of IOA or you are talking of these forces now in Equatoria, the kind of reactions that are coming out in terms of targeting innocent young people is actually serving President Kiir, because it is creating for him a kind of violent constituency. And so if you try to put up a violent constituency in order to resist President Kiir, you're actually encouraging a kind of security dilemma in the minds of ethnic GM, who feel that they are facing an existential threat. And by so doing, you are enlarging a violent constituency for President Kiir, and this is all that he wants.
You've been a senior commander in the army. Can you tell us the composition of the South Sudan army? Is it made up of all the tribes of South Sudan, or is it just an army for some few communities?
The equation changed in 1983, and the people of Upper Nile, followed by people of Bahar Ghazal, and later by people of Equatoria and the Nuba Mountains and Southern Blue Nile. It was simply dictated by the fact that the external backer that supported the Sudan People's Liberation Movement was Ethiopia, and Ethiopia shares a long border with Upper Nile more than any other provinces of South Sudan. So this should not be taken out of context to mean that people of Equatoria were not gallant enough as compared to people of Upper Nile and people of Bahar Ghazal.
And why is President Kiir making statements to imply that one ethnic group made a lot of sacrifices than the others?
Well, simply, this is informed by two things. First of all, sectarian beliefs that we can have a nation of all of us, yet we are not ready to make necessary compromises so that we are able to generate the national compact, or what you call the social contract, because the social contract, the national social contract, will not necessarily reflect the image of one ethnic community. The other explanation of it, other than sectarian drive, is the fact that some of us are not deeply informed with what history is all about. The history of South Sudan is that all of us contributed to it. Emilio Tapeng is not a Dinka. Ali Gwatla is not a Dinka. Gwep Mundeng is not a Dinka. King Budwe is not a Dinka.
Listening to statements from the two parties, I mean the major parties in this conflict now, the SPLM in the government and the SPLM in opposition, it looks like every statement is aimed at, you know, mobilizing people, manipulating South Sudanese. In your own words, what should South Sudanese do to avoid being manipulated by the two camps?
South Sudanese should watch out. And I want to underscore this. South Sudanese should watch out. The two camps, the two leaders, Kiir and Machar, and the organizations that they represent, have put them on a highway to Yugoslavia. And you know what I mean. It means it is about the politics of that other and us, which is dangerous. It means a possibility of ethnic cleansing in our country. It means a possibility of genocidal war in our country.
That's Majak Dagot, South Sudan's former Deputy Defense Minister, who is a senior member of the former SPLM political detainees. He was speaking to me from Heathrow International Airport earlier today in London. Youth around the Imatong state capital Torit say they have formed a vigilante group to counter rampant attacks and looting by gunmen along roads leading into and out of Torit. The vigilante group says state authorities are either unwilling or unable to secure roads in the area and stopped armed groups from attacking civilians. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Torit.
Residents of Himodong Epayam formed the vigilante group on Monday after an official working for the Dutch Relief and Development NGO, ZOA International, was murdered on Friday in Imatong Estate. Residents say the unidentified aid worker was shot dead by armed men on the Torit Ketire Road, 3 kilometers west of the town. Residents say the gunmen also burned down a police post in the same area over the weekend. Local youth say the killings motivated them to form a vigilant group to patrol the roads and ensure security for civilians in the area. Helen Ihisa is one of the Ketire residents. Speaking in her local Orugo language, Ihisa says the gunmen have stripped passengers naked and looted their property.
Now all these roads are bad, and only this one of Ketire is the only good ones. And if they also close this one, then people will die.
Area youth say they are fed up with gunmen who indiscriminately kill and humiliate people along the roads. James Loki is the head of the Oluo Monyomiji group. He says his men will respond quickly to road attacks and make the roads safe again for citizens.
We are defending our territory. The only thing we will protect, we will defend our territories and we will protect our people from being harassed on the way and all this.
Loki denies accusations by some government officials that area youths have attacked people on the roads leading in and out of Torit. He says he expects the Monyomiji to track down road criminals. Bashilo Malong is the chief of Himodonge village. He says the roads must remain open and be secured.
When we leave this road without making it safe, where shall we get salt? And many people came here to buy food and to take to tourists. If this road is closed, where will they get food? That is why we have come up with this initiative. We have no common enemy, only road attackers. We are not fighting the government or SPLA-IO, but protecting the road.
A delegation comprising Imatong state government officials met the vigilant youth group yesterday and approved their initiative to secure roads in the area. Okidimoy Ogura is the Imatong state acting governor.
This is now a precedence that these people or this group of Oluo has done, and it has given us the courage and motivation that we will not end here.
County Commissioner of Torit, Fermo Oleo, says local officials will support the vigilant group but did not specify what kind of support would be provided.
They have improved the security in the road. They have defended the whole estate of Imatong estate. That is why I came and to greet them and say to them, it is you go ahead with this work. It is you are a nationalist. Because you cannot see something happening in your area and you are seeing by your eyes. You have to take an action.
The vigilant group is requesting state officials to provide arms, help in fighting unidentified armed men terrorizing people on the roads. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the U.S. elections. That story is coming up right after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you make emotional decisions or logical ones?
I make both, but I think I make more logical decisions than the emotional ones.
I mostly make emotional decisions and it mostly works out. I don't really regret making it.
These two, they always move simultaneously. The emotional one, when you lost the dear one, of course you will be painted and you will lose your control. You'll be imbalanced, and when you are imbalanced, you will not actually have the control of your emotion, and there you find yourself losing the emotion.
Sometimes I make emotional decisions, but I later regret that.
I don't lash in making decisions. I sit down and think on how I'm going to make that decision to be a plover and a good one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Development Programme and the African Development Bank today released the African Economic Outlook Report for this year. The report says African cities are growing rapidly and that growth represents many challenges as well as opportunities in countries like Sudan. Nabil Biagio has more from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
The report was prepared by the African Development Bank, the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. And the theme for this year's edition is Sustainable Cities and Structural Transformation in Africa. Abdul Kamara is the resident representative of the African Development Bank in Sudan.
The report primarily aims at informing policymakers and development partners about the performance of Africa's macroeconomic aggregates and how these are impacting the lives of ordinary citizens.
The report states that cities across Africa are growing fast because millions of more people are migrating from rural areas to settle in big cities in search of education and economic opportunity. Selfa Ramachandran is the UNDP country director for Sudan. He says Sudan is a typical example of where mass migration from rural areas to cities like Khartoum, Port Sudan, and Niala is changing the country's makeup, putting enormous development pressures on the government.
Urban growth in Sudan presents significant challenges for its population and for the Sudanese government. The increasing number of IDPs, in addition to the considerable number of refugees expected to add to the already growing urban population in Sudan, and will create strain on government's ability to provide services.
Ramachandran says rural-urban migration in a country like Sudan also has the potential to deepen poverty and inequality in rural areas and increase crime rates.
It will be critical for us in this context to support the creation of more productive jobs for rapidly growing urban population, which is key to achieving structural transformation in Sudan. It will be crucial for us to fight youth unemployment and to contribute to the creation of new livelihood opportunities.
Mehdi Yassin is Sudan's Minister of State for Finance and Economic Planning. He says Sudan is working to counter the effect of rapid urbanization by improving the country's connectivity with its neighbors in order to foster trade and economic cooperation.
In Sudan, a few weeks we have opened the green trade corridor with Egypt. This is the second trade corridor with Egypt. We are now studying with the African Development Bank railways from Port Sudan to Ethiopia. We are linked with the Republic of South Sudan. We are less than 100 kilometers from the borders of the Republic of Central Africa, and we are 20 kilometers from the borders of Chad. With this integration, probably we can raise the regional indicators and the livelihood of the people within the region.
The report says Sudan achieved a gross domestic product of 5.3 in 2015, which is more than Africa's average of 3.6, while South Sudan saw a sharp decline in its domestic production in 2014 because of the war and hyperinflation in 2015. The report also notes South Sudan's significant drop in oil revenues, which has negatively impacted the country's economy. It estimates that South Sudan's gross domestic product has fallen by more than 5% in 2015. The government's net oil revenue forecast for the 2015-2016 fiscal year was only 17% of the previous year. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Social media site Twitter is buzzing with jokes about how the U.S. presidential election is starting to resemble one of Africa's messy political contests. It is a rare chance for the continent to poke fun at American politics. But analysts say the reality is not funny. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg on Africa's take on this most unusual poll.
African political watchers are humorously skewering U.S. politics in recent Twitter posts describing this year's presidential election in the same language often applied to African elections. Political analyst Ryan Cummings contributed to the several hundred tweets. His observations teased the possible consequences of a disastrous poll, like Mexico shutting its borders amid post-election violence in the United States, or citizens of troubled African nations like South Sudan and Burundi being evacuated from America. Cummings, who runs consultancy Signal Risk from the South African city of Cape Town, says he finds the election bizarre.
It's something that, you know, you wouldn't expect in a established democracy such as that in the United States or pretty much anywhere else, you know, in the developed world. It's something, the claims that are being made, the whole demeanor of Donald Trump in the lead up to the ballot is something one would readily associate with an African politician.
He declined to compare Trump, the Republican Party nominee, to a specific African leader. As some Africans on Twitter have noted, Trump has mirrored African leaders in more ways than one, notably by saying his opponent should be jailed. That is a tactic used in Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Uganda, to name only a few examples, after contentious elections. Twitter users note that Trump has, like South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, been accused of sexual assault. And the Twitter world in Africa made the link that, like the longtime authoritarian leader of Gambia, Trump has bragged about his sexual conquests. Like Nigeria's president, he has made comments that many people consider highly misogynistic. And like countless politicians in Africa, Trump has conjectured that the election will be rigged against him. On the other side, Trump's challenger Hillary Clinton is, like many African leaders, a member of an elite political dynasty with deep pockets. A journalist with the International Justice Monitor in Nairobi, Tom Maliti, says Kenyans are mystified by Trump.
There is an element of laughing at the U.S., and it has to do more with how could the American political system produce a candidate like Donald Trump. And then now that he is the candidate, people are concerned that means he does stand a chance of becoming the U.S. president, and wondering what that would mean.
But he says this is no laughing matter. Maliti watched up close as his nation went from stability to chaos after its 2007 elections, and says other nations count on the United States to set an example.
Candidate Trump may not realize this, but the American system has been imitated, adapted, and taken up by a variety of African countries, most countries that is. And therefore, the U.S. has stood as a model for African countries that either have had democracy for decades or that are in the process of instituting a democratic culture in their countries.
Tweeters have spanned the spectrum of African political foibles, joking about President Barack Obama changing the constitution to allow himself a third term, as has happened in Burundi, or the United States imposing a social media blackout, as Ethiopia has done. But the jokes cover one grim truth for Africans watching the U.S. election. This is a little too close to home. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump refused to promise that he will accept the results of the U.S. election in his third and final debate with Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton last night. The two White House hopefuls also clashed over Russia, immigration, and appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court in the debate held in Las Vegas, Nevada. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a wrap-up of the third debate from Washington.
For the second straight debate, there was no handshake between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in their final face-off. Perhaps the most significant moment came when Trump was pressed by moderator Chris Wallace about his repeated claims that the U.S. election process is rigged against him.
That you will absolutely accept the result of this election.
I will look at it at the time. I'm not looking at anything now. I'll look at it at the time. What I've seen is so bad. First of all, the media is so dishonest, and they've poisoned the minds of the voters.
Clinton said she found Trump's response horrifying and said it ran counter to U.S. political tradition.
He is denigrating. He's talking down our democracy. And I, for one, am appalled that somebody who is the nominee of one of our two major parties would take that kind of position.
Trump and Clinton also clashed over whether Russia is trying to influence the election process through cyber attacks, which U.S. intelligence officials believe is the case.
Finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past.
When pressed, Trump said he would, of course, condemn Russia for the activity if it was true. But he also said China or others could be behind the cyber attacks.
I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good. If Russia and the United States got along well and went after ISIS, that would be good. He has no respect for her. He has no respect for our president.
Trump was also on the defensive over allegations from at least 9 women who say he groped them sexually.
Well, first of all, those stories have been largely debunked. Those people, I don't know those people. I have a feeling how they came. I believe it was her campaign that did it.
Clinton sought to defend those making the allegations.
You know, Donald thinks belittling women makes him bigger. He goes after their dignity, their self-worth, and I don't think there is a woman anywhere who doesn't know what that feels like.
The candidates also offered different views on Supreme Court appointments, abortion, and immigration when Trump again called for a border wall. But Clinton said he would rip families apart. With Hillary Clinton now holding an expanded lead of about 7 percentage points, early voting is underway in more than 30 states. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Never Let Go by Anthony Hamilton.
How can I prepare you for how I want to love you? And I know you've been hurting, pain and love is all the same in your eyes. So baby, take a chance to really let me show you. And if you open up, I'll teach you how to love for life. Yeah. Cause the lonely never win. Yeah.
But if I love you,
I'll never let you go.
Don't you trust you?
Just tell me what you want.
Girl, I need you.
Girl, put your heart on mine.
I promise that I'll never let it go.
Well, it's nice to listen to a love song after a very heated debate. We've been listening to Anthony Hamilton with the song Never Let Go. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for creating time to listen to our show. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
To trust my heart over my mind.